Baseball is back.
He doesn't want a super spreader out there in the middle of the field.
The season is different. On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands.
You guys wanted to do it. You've been wanting to do it for months.
There's a lot to talk
about.
Who
are you kidding? Don't give me all that bull crap.
And this is the place to do it. This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big Y, Safety Insurance, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wines, Gravely, Budweiser, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't think it's ever fun to finish in last. So to get out of last would be nice. But we've had a tough season to where even if that happens, we know we're going to be disappointed. So unless this team is really going to the playoffs, I think anything else is a disappointment. So whether it's last, third, fourth, or fifth, whatever it is, it's a disappointment. So,
Red Sox manager Ron Renicki speaking before tonight's game against the Baltimore Orioles over at Fenway Park. Red Sox will play three games against the Orioles and then go to Atlanta for three games, and then that is it. Mercifully, they will pull the plug on this 2020 season, and that'll be the end of it. But as you heard Renicki say there, when you're the Red Sox, it doesn't really matter whether you finish last or finish third. It's about making the playoffs, chasing championships, etc. Nonetheless, four last place finishes for John Henry's Red Sox and four World Series. Four last place finishes. Will this be five, Jimmy Stewart, or will this be four? There was 2012, 2014, 2015, 2017 maybe. Did they finish last again? I don't think they did, actually.
No, they were in the playoffs in 2017.
So this is the fourth one. I think this will be the fourth one, which really is inexcusable. Inexcusable that you would have this many last place finishes. So let me just tell you a couple of things off the top, and then we'll get to the question of the day, which relates to something that we said back in the season. But before I even do that, let me just tell you, and I meant to mention this last night. If you've listened to Felger and Mazz, you listen to the Baseball Reporters, you know that historically, here at 98.5, we have a golf tournament every year to benefit Children's Hospital Boston, the Hoosier Caddy Classic. This year, because of COVID, we weren't able to have the event. And as a result, we were not able to raise money, at least through a golf tournament, for Children's Hospital Boston. Let me give you a little more background and tell you that this is an event that I started many, many years ago in 2005 in memory of my nephew. It was an event I did on my own. My nephew died at 10 months. He was born with lots of complications. I got tremendous care at Children's Hospital. 98.5, after the station was created, was kind enough to take on a golf tournament as its own and still donate the money to Children's Hospital Boston. So what we are doing at 98.5 this year to help out Children's is we're having an online auction with some items that are on our website. You just have to go to 98.5thesportshub.com. And then at the top of the webpage, you will see the lead items scroll through, and Cam Newton's on there, a bunch of Patriots stories. If you just scroll through those top stories, you will find a link to the 98.5 The Sports Hub Hoosier Caddy Auction to benefit Children's Hospital. Some interesting items there, including entry into next year's event, things like that, some concert tickets, sports memorabilia. You can bid on those items, and the money will go to Children's Hospital Boston to support a great cause. Now, as for the Red Sox, and thank you for that in advance, and I thank you for that personally as well. Again, I have a vested interest in that. 617-779-0985 is your number. Jimmy Stewart, you can open up the phone lines right away. Four shows to go on the Baseball Reporters. Four. And they can't end fast enough.
See that light at the end of the tunnel, Maz.
Nonetheless, I will say that even though the season has been a complete train wreck, I always find that at the end of the year, there are things worth talking about. Because we start focusing on the future of the team, and we review the performance of those on the field. And I know that many of you are not watching the team, and I don't blame you. But at the beginning of the year, particularly when things went bad, because if you remember early on, I said there's a chance this team could be really bad. Really bad. And it didn't take them long to prove it. And once it's really started to go bad, and I think Murray and Jimmy Stewart both vouch for me on this, one of the things I said was, well, you know what? We're going to find out who the true pros are on this team. We're going to find out. We're going to find out which guys, in spite of the fact that they play for a wretched operation, they have no pitching, they have no chance to really compete and win. We are going to find out which guys are true pros and productive players worth getting behind and investing in, and which guys are not. We're going to find out about those guys. Because as the saying goes, you always learn more about people in bad times than in good times. You learn more about them in times of adversity than you do in times of production or efficiency. It's easy for everyone to be a good guy when things are going well and to do their job when things are going well because you're getting rewarded for it. What about when you're not? What about when you really have nothing to play for? Who shows up and who doesn't? So let me ask you as a Red Sox fan, and you can take this two ways. Who have you learned the most about this year? And I would say positively and negatively. And I focus on the second part of that more than the first. So who have you learned about the most? What players have told you the most when you look at the roster and you say, you know what, all things considered, that guy played. He showed up. He gave me an honest effort. Even though the stadium was empty, even though the team was out of contention, that guy, generally speaking, did his job. And on the flip side, you look at it and say, that guy quit. And I can give you a bunch of names. This is might be some good news. I can give you a bunch of names to the first question. Who showed you something this year? Who showed you something? Xander Bogaerts, OPS 837, 10 homers, 26 RBI, hit 286. He's faded a little here of late, but overall, Bogaerts gave you an honest effort this year.
Gave you a solid effort from the rip. There was never, you know, I think he was really disappointed, too, when he realized how bad the pitching was real early. Like, that guy's the face of the franchise now.
Bogaerts tried. He did. Rafael Devers started out horrendously.
Not great.
Horrendously.
Showed up out of shape. You know, you heard reports that he was a butcher at third base, and he continues to be here and there, but he turned around and was really good at the plate.
Boy, he really has. He salvaged his season. In fact, in a lot of ways, you could say that guy's shown you more than anybody because it was going bad early, and he easily could have just spiraled and gone down the drain.
And so those two are your building blocks, and I felt that going into the season anyway. It's Bogaerts and Devers.
Verdugo's another one.
Yep.
Now, he had different circumstances because Verdugo was with the Red Sox for the first time and had something to prove, had some people to win over, had an organization to impress, all of that after coming over in the Mookie Betts deal. So he had different stakes than everyone else, but he played. I'd even give you Christian Vasquez. Overall, 275, started like gangbusters. So hasn't been nearly as productive in the last month as he was in the first couple of weeks.
Maz, I'll even give you Martin Perez if you want to talk pitchers. I think he's actually been okay.
No question, Murray. Absolutely. I'll give you Martin Perez, too. Again, now I would say someone who had a little something different to prove is with a new organization. So different stakes for Martin Perez. But all in all, 11 games started, number one on the team. In a 60-game schedule, you're making 12 starts, max. He's going to make them all. His ERA is under 4, 3.88, which means he's giving you everything he was supposed to give you. Now, the innings aren't huge. It's 58. But nobody pitches six innings a start anymore.
But compared to the rest of those losers in the rotation, and Evaldi's been okay, I suppose. But, you know, Perez has had a pretty decent season for what it is.
Absolutely. Yep, and Evaldi missed a little time, but even him, 8 games started, 4.25 ERA, about what you'd expect. He gave you an honest effort. So, again, I ask you as a fan, who did you learn about? Because to me, there's one guy above all else that you should be focused on, and we didn't name any of them yet. Murray, who is it?
Oh, it's J.D. Martinez. And I know the other one. I want to name Andrew Benintendi, too. I know he ended up on the 60-day DL. But those two, losers.
Okay, so I'm going to say this plain and simple without any grudge or any agenda or anything else. What J.D. Martinez has done this year is a disgrace. It is a disgrace what J.D. Martinez has done this year. This is a guy who opted into his contract, which is fine. I mean, he had that right. Stayed with the Red Sox, $22.5 million or whatever the number is to be the DH of the team. And what has J.D. Martinez done all year long? What has he done? And so you want to chalk it up to a bad year? I would say, really? A guy like J.D. Martinez, who is one of the most prolific hitters in baseball, do you understand where J.D. Martinez ranks right now among major league leaders in various categories? Of 144 qualifying major league players in batting average, which I know nobody cares about anymore, but of 144 qualifying major leaguers in batting average, J.D. Martinez ranks 134th. 134 out of 144. One of the best hitters in the game who mailed it in from day one. He quit from just about the first day of the season, going right back to the first week when he wouldn't pinch it in New York. And I'm sorry, Jared Karabas and everybody else who believes that there was a miscommunication there. No, J.D. Martinez didn't want to hit. He didn't want to hit. So what do you want to do? You want to talk about OPS? Because batting average doesn't mean anything. What about OPS, Maz? 130th. 130th out of 144 guys, J.D. Martinez. So we can sit here and say, Xander Bogaerts showed up and played. Rafael Devers, Verdugo, Christian Vasquez, Murray said Martin Perez, even Nathan Eovaldi. Those guys showed up. They did their best. They're limited, but they did their best. J.D. Martinez? J.D. Martinez quit. He quit from day one. He was never really hot. Not once. And up until a few days ago, he was hitting under 200. J.D. Martinez, Mr. Pro, Mr. iPad, Mr. Professional Hitter, Mr. Whole Nine Yards. 202 or whatever the hell it is.
I think it's 201.
134th out of 144 qualifying players in the major leagues. Yep. And OPS, 130th out of 144.
He's currently hitting 205. Bobby Dalbec has more home runs than him, though. I find that funny.
So you tell me, is that okay?
No.
Is that okay? If you're a Red Sox fan, you okay with that? That in a year like this, oh, it's fine, whatever, we'll write it off. Or, because you can't look at the guys like Bogaerts and Devers and say, you know what? Good for them. They showed up without being angry at J.D. Martinez in the same breath. It's the same question. Who did you learn the most about? Who did you learn the most about? It doesn't have to be a positive answer. It can be a negative one. J.D. Martinez flat out quit. He quit. I'll give Peter Abraham of the Globe credit for this, too, because he made a passing reference to this recently about how Martinez checked out weeks ago. I would say Martinez checked out at the beginning. I think J.D. Martinez quit from day one. That's what I think. 617-779-0985. We'll start there. The Red Sox have an interesting new pitcher on the mound tonight, and there was a very noteworthy development, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN today, regarding the Major League draft that you, if you are a Red Sox fan, should have great interest in. We'll tell you what that was, and we'll also speak to someone about the draft later in the show. All of that coming up on the Baseball Reporters.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, the Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Talking everything baseball.
So if you're a Red Sox fan, here's what you think.
It's the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, let's start with Pivetta. Obviously, he has some major league time under his belt. He's a big physical power pitcher. He's got a really good fastball, good breaking ball. He also has a changeup. A guy who's shown the ability to carry a starter's workload. And a lot of the underlying traits there have shown the potential for a lot more success than he's enjoyed in terms of his results. Again, power pitcher that we think should be capable of holding down a rotation spot, and really feel like he's a good fit going forward, and that we've got a chance to help him reach a level that he has not yet in his career, despite his big stuff.
Ty and Bloom. Going back to the trading deadline when the Red Sox acquired Nick Pivetta from the Philadelphia Phillies for Brandon Workman and Heath Hembry, a couple of relievers. Red Sox also got a prospect in that deal, Connor Siebold, but Pivetta will make his major league debut tonight. And Ron Renneke, the Red Sox manager, has danced around this for a while, wouldn't sort of address when Pivetta was going to pitch. We now know the reason why the Red Sox held him out till the final week was at least in part, if not entirely, because they didn't want him to get the service time so he wouldn't qualify for free agency earlier. He would have qualified for free agency at the end of 2023. Now it's the end of 2024. So I think the Red Sox actually handled that right. It's a bit of a dick move, but they did the right thing. No reason to rush him to the big leagues now. He'll get two starts this week. He'll pitch tonight. He'll pitch Sunday. Renicki said that during his media briefing on Zoom before tonight's game. So I think this is interesting. To me, this is one of the games you want to watch. The Tanner Houck games, I say the same thing about. From early on, these were the things you needed to target and identify with the Red Sox. Who was going to be able to make a contribution? So you have a couple of pitchers that came out of the system or in a trade that now have a chance to jump in. Tanner Houck is one of them, 2-0. Pretty good. Now Pivetta goes to the mound. He'll make two starts. Houck will get another one later this week. And Murray mentioned in the first segment, Martin Perez. And you know what I would say all three of those guys have in common? Chaim Bloom. So Martin Perez was Bloom's only real significant signing on the market. And I would say overall, Perez has been a success. I would give Chaim Bloom credit for Martin Perez. The Red Sox saw something there. It's only 11 starts. He'll make one more, I think, this week. But again, overall, they were okay with Martin Perez. That worked. Martin Perez was pretty good. He did what they expected. They got a little more out of him than a lot of people thought they would. I would say Tanner Houck. And you would say, why would I give Chaim Bloom credit for Tanner Houck? Because drafting and identifying talent isn't necessarily what the Tampa Bay Rays did best. And we spoke about this with Alex Spear of the Globe. Was that last night or was that last week? Good God.
Last week.
They're all running together. Holy mackerel. Wow, that's bad. My brain is really turning to mush.
And Cam Newton didn't throw a pick six either.
Right. Holy crap. So, but it is something we talked about with Alex Spear. And he said, well, oddly enough, the Rays have not drafted very well, which is true. They haven't. But what they have done is develop pitchers very well, pick up guys who had some ability and then tapped into it. So I would say Tanner Houck, former first-round pick, 2017 under Dave Dombrowski. It feels like developmentally he's on the right path again. Do we give credit for that to Bloom? And I think at this stage we probably do. And what about Martin Perez? They brought him in. They identified something. They got something out of him. Now Pivetta goes to the mound. So I think that's all worth keeping an eye on because, to me, this was the strength of the Rays operation. It wasn't the drafting. It was the development of the pitching. It was the ability to take guys in who had more ability than people were getting out of them and then refining that and getting those guys to a point where they could be productive. That's what the Red Sox did with Nathan Eovaldi, by the way. And that was Chaim Bloom, although Eovaldi had started to turn the corner where? In Tampa Bay with the Rays. That's where the Red Sox acquired him from. So just something to consider. Now I'm going to take your calls. And then interesting development today as it related to the MLB draft, which we'll get to, and speak with a guest about the draft in the next segment. But first, Bob and Methuen. Bob, what do you got?
Tony, I have to disagree with you on Alex Verdugo and Rafael Devers. Rafael Devers, for one, showed up totally unprepared to play baseball. He got off to a terrible start, has played third base like it's been mined by the Iraqis. He has been awful at third base. One thing the Red Sox cannot go into next season with is Bogaerts at short and Devers at third.
What's your problem with Verdugo?
Verdugo? See, the problem with Verdugo is people are still trying to think they got something for Mookie Betts. He has 14 RBIs on the season, Tony. You're talking about J.D. Martinez not being productive? Yes, he has not been productive. But Verdugo, the other day I looked this up, he was 67th amongst outfielders in RBIs. They got nothing in that deal. It was a Brinks robbery by the Dodgers. And fans here are still trying to talk themselves into thinking, oh, yeah, we got Verdugo in that deal. Take a look at
Bob, first of all, because you call this show a lot, do you like anything?
Yeah.
Well, who leads the team in runs scored?
Verdugo does.
Does that not count? Runs scored don't count? How many RBIs did Mookie Betts get when he was here?
Tony, I knew you were going to go back to Mookie Betts because you don't like the guy personally. This is how I feel about it. I don't think you like Betts. I think there's some sort of backstory that you have not brought out in the air. I mean, you bring up Betts' playoff struggles.
Bob, in all seriousness, and I'm going to let you go. There's no personal story with Mookie Betts. I like Mookie Betts as a player. Had he been willing to stay, I wish the Red Sox would have kept him. I don't know how many times I have to say that. But there's something about your tone, frankly, that I find kind of insulting, if you want to know the truth. So, really? And what you said about Devers was not wrong. He turned it around. He turned it around when he had all the reason and more to get on the toilet. So I'll tell you what, I don't care. You can disagree with the take. It's fine. I don't care about that. But to sit there and say that J.D. Martinez or those guys are somehow in the same breath as J.D. Martinez, you can't be serious. Who's really got the axe to grind? It feels to me like you just, your axe to grind is with me, which again is fine. But at least admit it. I just said, seriously, your tone is insulting. It's insulting. Dan's in Quincy. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
Good.
I completely agree with you with your take on JD. I think it's a huge, huge disappointment with his performance this year. I think he has a real chance to be a true leader on the team this year because he has more experience. He's played some bad teams up in Detroit, and he has more experience than Sander and Devers, and he just laid an egg, and it's really a disappointment. I think
he
could have possibly been good. But.
So, Dan, your phone's not great, so I'm going to let you go. Here's what I'll tell you. There is nothing I find more insulting than a professional athlete who quits. Nothing. I don't find anything more insulting than that. So Bob and Methuen wants to get after Devers for not being in shape. Amen. Amen. Boy, is that a bad look, because that's quitting. That's what that is. You're quitting. You're not even trying to stay in shape. But at least when it started bad, he actually turned it around. What did J.D. Martinez do? And with regard to the Betts deal, can we just get this out there so that I don't get, because again, another thing that pisses me off to no end is when I get accused of saying something or doing something that I never did or said. And I like Mookie Betts as a player. I don't like him as much as a lot of you do, because to a lot of you people, he was Willie Mays. He's not. But he's damn good. Would I rather have him over Alex Verdugo? Every day of the week. Twice on Sunday, as the expression goes. No two ways about it, Bob. Thanks for the newsflash. Alex Verdugo doesn't replace Mookie Betts. Who does? How do you replace a guy like that? You don't. So I'm just judging the guys by the performance they gave the Red Sox this year. Mookie Betts left the team weeks ago. He might be the MVP of the National League, along with Fernando Tatis Jr. He was fabulous this year. But he's gone. So I'm judging Verdugo. You're pissed that Verdugo's not Mookie, so it sounds to me like your agenda is you're still mad at the trade. So let's be honest about it as to what the parameters are. That's all. Dan's in a car. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing, Maz? Before the break, you said, to call in about whoever it is that you learned something about, good or bad. And I'm calling in to tell you, I learned something good. And the person I learned something about is myself. And it's that I don't care about baseball. I learned that I am compassionate. I've learned I'm a compassionate person. I feel very bad for you that you have to go in there every night and talk about this garbage. Even though you're a liar.
Why am I a liar?
Tell you why you're a liar.
All right, just be quick about it.
You just said there was something really interesting coming up about the draft.
There is. I'll tell you what it is. It is something interesting about the draft because it was up in the air. I'm not a liar. I manipulate it a little bit. It's my job to sort of tease it.
Massage the truth.
Yeah, but it is a noteworthy thing. If you're a Red Sox fan, this is a significant development. It's not insignificant. This is a significant thing that could have a profound impact on the future of the Red Sox. And we will tell you what that is, Dan, after Jim Murray gets you caught up on headlines. And also, we will be joined by Jim Callis of MLB.com, who is a draft expert, to review or give us an overview of the upcoming MLB draft. Now, why would we be doing that?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Mm-hmm.
welcome back to the Baseball Reporters. Final caller in the last segment said I'm a liar. I didn't have anything interesting to say this segment, or I had a piece of information that I would deem significant for Red Sox fans and their followers. I wasn't lying. I suppose it's a subjective type of thing, what qualifies as significant information and what does not. But before we get to Jim Callis of MLB.com, who is formerly of Baseball America, I think, if I'm not mistaken. We'll get to Jim in a second. He can tell us the background. But believe me when I tell you, this guy is sort of a guru when it comes to draft talent. And I thought it was important to talk to him for this reason. Today, Jeff Passan of ESPN, and Passan is, to me, has done an absolutely fabulous job this year with baseball coverage. Red Sox fans wouldn't know it because your team has been so dreadful. You've had no reason to really follow. But going back to all of the COVID negotiations, the labor talks, stuff that's been going on the field, Passan really has done a terrific job. So today, Passan put in a notes column and then tweeted out also. But in a notes column was this item, Murray. Please share.
The 2021 MLB draft order is highly likely to be determined by this year's record. He said, while MLB has yet to announce whether teams' 2020 records will determine draft order, a source familiar with the league's thinking said that the clause written into MLB's March agreement with the Players Association that gave the league the right to determine draft order was a contingency in case the season was canceled, well before records were indicative of much.
Okay, so that is a long roundabout way of saying that it's going to be status quo as it pertains to the draft. Now, if you remember, there was some speculation early in the year that if a partial season was played, or even in the event a full season was played, that MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred might put in or exercise his right to set the draft order through some other standard. Typically, the team with the worst record gets the first pick. The thought was among MLB executives that Manfred was going to create some sort of formula that weighed both 2019 and 2020. So even if the Red Sox had finished with the worst record in baseball this year, they wouldn't have received the first pick. As it turns out, that may not be true. They may go purely according to one loss record. And as many of you know, the Red Sox right now have the third worst record in all of baseball, tied with the Arizona Diamondbacks. So the worst thing the Red Sox could do is actually win some games this week, but right now they would pick third. I think the number one pick is out of the question. The Pittsburgh Pirates have 15 wins. The Red Sox have six games left, and they have 20. Even if the Red Sox win them all, or lose them all, rather, and the Pirates would have to win them all in order for the Red Sox to catapult to the number one pick, and that would also require the cooperation of the Texas Rangers, who have the second worst record. But if the Red Sox play this right, they could end up with no worse than the number three pick, maybe as high as number two. And before I bring in Jim Callis, let me tell you, the Red Sox have not picked higher than seventh since 1967. They picked third that year. Since then, they've picked seventh, I think, three times. One was Trot Nixon. One was Trey Ball. One was Andrew Benintendi. So, now whether or not the Red Sox do anything with this pick is something entirely different. But I think it is now an important draft because the Red Sox have a high pick, which they don't typically get, or they're going to have a high pick, which is why I wanted to bring in a draft guru. Jim Callis of MLB.com joins us now via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, by the way. And Jim, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yeah, you pronounced it right, and I was at Baseball America for almost 25 years and two stints, so you got that part right also.
Okay, and now you are you exclusively with MLB.com now?
Correct, yes.
Okay. So, and I know you've done work on the MLB Network and the MLB Pipeline, if baseball fans follow that, is basically a list of the top 100 prospects in the game. So let me start by asking you this, because again, it's not often, Jim, that the Red Sox get the chance at a high pick like this. What does the top of the MLB draft look like? And when I say the top.
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer because of 2020. On the high school side, you aren't scouting guys before their draft year during their season. So you wouldn't have scouted high school or college guys for next year's draft too much during the spring. But the difference is during the summer, the high schools have had a lot of the big-time showcases they do. Teams feel pretty comfortable that they have information on high school guys, but you know, college baseball was not the case. I mean, the biggest proving ground this summer is the Cape Cod League, as you know, many of your listeners are very familiar with, I'm sure. It's a wood bat league. The top players go. It's a top destination. They didn't play the Cape Cod League this year. There were a scattering of summer leagues here and there, but the vast majority, I'd say probably, I don't know, 80% of your top, you know, guys who'd go in the first two or three rounds from the college side didn't play anywhere. So you don't have any data. That said, I mean, I think it's probably an average-ish draft. I mean, and at the top, I mean, there are some good names. There's always going to be talent at the top of the draft. So I guess even though we don't know for sure what we're looking at just because the college guys haven't really played, you know, if the Red Sox are picking in the top three or five picks, they should get a very good player.
Okay, so this is the part that I'm interested in, Jim, and I recognize it's hard to gauge individual players, but you as well as I know that these things typically are planned 2 or 3 years out, where teams look at it and say, well, you know, 2022 projects as a good draft year, or 2023 projects as a good draft year. But you're saying that 2021, and I recognize that we've lost effectively a year of evaluation is what you're saying.
Right.
So but did prior to COVID, did 2021 project as an average draft year? Or because I had heard from some people that actually there was no clear consensus number one per se, but that the top part of the draft was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think your favorite to go number one overall is Kumar Rocker out of Vanderbilt. You know, he was MVP at the College World Series last year.
Right-handed pitcher.
His dad, Tracy, was an NFL defensive lineman. You know, Kumar had a chance to go in the first round of high school, but he was committed to Vanderbilt. So he's kind of your favorite to go number one. And, you know, I mean, there are some good guys at the top of the draft. You know, if the Red Sox are picking in the top, say, three or four picks, you know, you got Rocker, you have Jack Leiter, Al Sun, who's also at Vanderbilt. There's a hitter named Judd Fabian, Matt McClain, who was a first-round pick out of high school but went to UCLA. Both Fabian and Matt McClain were very, very good in the Cape Cod League 2 years ago. There's a catcher at Miami named Adrian Goodell Castillo. So there's a lot of college guys. The top high school kid is probably a kid named Jordan Lawler, who's a shortstop from Texas. I mean, like you said, I think it's probably early to put a true characterization on how good this draft will be, but those are all very good players you could get at the top of the draft. And as you noted, you know, I mean, I've been covering the draft forever. You know, I mean, when the Red Sox picked seventh, you know, in twice in 3 years, I mean, that was unusual because, I mean, outside the first 3 years of the draft, they've almost never picked in the top 10.
Well, so that's right. And look, for obvious reasons, that if you go back to the late 60s, which is when the draft began, right, Jim? Prior to
1965,
that? 1965,
yeah.
Okay, so again, you know, since that time, the Red Sox obviously have been one of the most successful teams in the big leagues, and I know they didn't start winning World Series until this ownership group got here, but year in and year out, they were a winning team and have been for a very long time. So this just represents a really novel and unique opportunity for them. But the need for pitching in the Boston organization now is just clear to everyone. There's a huge void there. There has been a void for some time. So one of the other questions I want to ask you is, when there are pitchers at the top of the draft, like Rocker, like Leiter, and again, both at Vanderbilt, both right-handed pitchers, what does history say about the viability of pitchers at the top of the draft versus position players? As how much more risk is there with a pitcher in the draft versus a position player, or are they all the same?
No, I think there's more risk with pitching. It's just the nature of pitching. You know, I mean, you can have everything. You can do everything right as a pitcher and get hurt. You know, like they get hurt more often. You know, there's more attrition, like I said. You know, Jaden Hill from LSU is another pitcher I'd throw into that group. You know, the tricky thing is, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, once they determine the draft order, which, you know, I was excited as you were, Tony, when I saw what Jeff wrote, just because I keep getting asked about it and nobody knows, because obviously there are many things more important to MLB right now than next year's draft. And that was the first semi-definitive statement anybody had made about the draft order. There was a lot of speculation you might wait it. But the tricky part's going to be is let's say the Red Sox pick second or third or whatever. I think they will tell you, you know, Mike Rickard, Paul Toboni, you know, whoever you talk to there, you have to take who you think is the best available player. So let's say they pick third and Kumar Rocker is gone, and they think that Judd Fabian and Matt McClain, you know, Fabian's a Florida outfielder, McClain's a UCLA shortstop, you know, Jordan Lawler, the Texas high school shortstop. Let's say that after all the scouting next spring, they determine those are the next three best guys. I think they will tell you, you have to take, especially if you're picking that high,
sure,
you have to take the best guy, even if he's not a pitcher. So it'll be interesting. Like the draft mistakes that come back to bite people the most are when you try to force a position and take a guy you don't think is as good, but hey, we need a catcher. Hey, we need a pitcher. You've got to take the best guy.
Okay, and so I agree with you there. And I'm not this. I don't know that this necessarily qualifies, but you know, many people remember the year Todd Van Poppel was in the draft. I believe he went. Did he go first and Chipper Jones went second?
Well, it's weird because that was back when bonuses were just starting to explode. And Todd Van Poppel had an agent named Scott Boras who was just kind of on his rise to become the most powerful agent in the game. And teams balked at paying money. I mean, at the beginning of the 80s, Tony, it was crazy. You'd have all kinds of high picks go unsigned. Like Barry Bonds was a second-round pick out of high school by his, you know, the team where his dad had been a star. He went to college because the Giants offered him $60,000 and wouldn't give him $66,000. Like that was, people were still kind of coming out of that era, and bonuses were rising. Van Poppel wanted a big league contract and said he was going to go to college. So he actually went 14th to the A's, and Chipper went number one. But Chipper went out and struggled in rookie ball the first year, and not that the media attention was nearly the same as it is now on these guys, but there's a lot of talk like, man, how'd they pick this guy number one? What a mistake. You know, the A's were coming off a World Series championship and got Todd Van Poppel, and it looked like they pulled the coup to end all coups, and it didn't work out that way.
So that's right. That's what I remember is that Van Poppel was projected as number one. The Braves ended up having to take Chipper, and we all know he turned into a Hall of Fame talent. So, Jim, look, I'd love to babble on because, honestly, this kind of stuff interests me. It's not something that we do enough with our fans here, mostly because the Red Sox rarely are picking this high in the draft. But that is obviously, or it certainly feels like that is going to change in 2021. So I just wanted to thank you for the time.
Oh, yeah, no problem, Tony. Hey, and the good news is we've got 10 months before the draft, so we got plenty of time to hash this out between now and then if you want to have me back on at some
point. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll take you up on that. At some point between now and then, we'll absolutely do that. So thank you.
Okay, take care, Tony.
Okay, Jim Callis, MLB.com. Again, to me, from what and I've never met Jim, but from what I understand, he's as good on the draft as anybody in the country.
Seems like quite a nice fella, too.
Yeah, and I would tell you that this is a massive opportunity for the Red Sox, Murray, for obvious reasons. This season has been a train wreck. And if you end up coming out of it with the number three pick in the draft, I don't know, that might be worth it. Might be worth it, especially if the kid can play. Now, whether they can get it right, whether the Red Sox can get it right, is a completely different matter, as we know. But it could be as high as, you know, right now, they're number three. Tied for third with Arizona. That's pretty good.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.